Welcome to another episode of Living Downstream. My name is Ryan, and I am an AmeriCorps member serving in the role of Environmental Education and Outreach Leader for UMC Watersheds. In this episode, you'll hear from Elena Leninger of Source One Serenity, who will be sharing how the organization utilizes nature immersion activities to help veterans to heal. Then, we'll share an interview with Casey Hovick, Executive Director of UMC Watersheds, who will offer his perspective on how diversity in an organization and biodiversity in an ecosystem can build resilience, as well as a variety of upcoming events and opportunities to get involved with the organization. As always, I'd like to begin with a land acknowledgement to recognize the Indigenous groups who inhabited this land for generations and took care of the UMC watershed before white settlers arrived. These groups include Cow Creek Umpqua, Coquille, Malala, and others. Our guest on the show is Elena Leninger of Source One Serenity. So I first heard about your organization through a previous interviewee, Joanne Gordon, who was telling me a little bit about it and got me intrigued. Can you give a little background on the history of your organization? How did it get started?
Thank you so much for inviting me. So about the history of our organization, it's a long story. There are several reasons. First, maybe I should tell a little bit about myself. So my background is in my education of environmental business administration. And so I was studying it at the only zero emission university in Germany at that time. And that was definitely a very profound experience for me to be at that campus, like green and environmentally conscious campus. It was everything about sustainability, long-term mindset and thinking, and of course, renewable energies. But after my studies, I ended up working for a corporate world in international commerce. And it was really good for me because of attractive pay, very exciting opportunities, including traveling. And this is actually due to my languages. But at one point in my career, I really realized that it doesn't align with my values, because in the company where I was working, I really realized that this is where profit stands before planet and people. There is another reason as well. So my husband is a military veteran. He was stationed in Germany. This is where I met him. And I also have witnessed his journey after his combat deployments and how hard it was. And so I know real truth about PTSD firsthand. I really could see him, how he was going down. And then how one activity has shown him an absolutely different way, a way of excitement, motivation, encouragement. And that activity was fly fishing. Maybe it sounds funny, but it was definitely a life savior for him. So he has created like a small community of veterans and active duty members in Germany. So he was working for outdoor recreation there. He was taking soldiers to Austria for fly fishing trips. He was teaching fly tying classes at the base. It was really great. And then once I actually read an article about another nonprofit which serves women with breast cancer, and their approach is about fly fishing for them. And when I realized that how therapeutic it is, and I know this firsthand on my husband, I thought maybe I should start doing research how it can help veterans. And by the way, so I was almost like actually surprised and maybe overwhelmed that there have been so many studies done exactly on combat veterans or veterans in general and how fly fishing can help them with their mental health. So this is how we came up with this idea to start a nonprofit for veterans. And we started with fly fishing. We also have chosen Roseburg, and that was, I really would like to share this story, why we have chosen Roseburg. It was in 2013. My husband received a phone call from his friend in Luxembourg. And his friend was telling him so that he will be having a very interesting person from the U.S. and who is, of course, like a celebrity in fly fishing. So in any case, when my husband went to meet him, so that a person is, his name is Frank Moore, who is a World War II veteran, and he is the founder of Steamboat Inn. So this is how we have established this communication. And then when I started doing research about Roseburg, so and this is when I saw, okay, this is a place of the VA, and it's actually a paradise for fly fishing. So what else do you need? This is how we ended up in 2016. And this is when we started Source One Serenity. We started everything on a low budget with crowdfunding campaign, thanks to the support from our friends. And we started with just outdoor retreats or weekend retreats or day outings about fly fishing and also hiking. But at the very beginning, so I was I wanted to identify a financial sustainability. And as I told you, so I come from for-profit. So nonprofit sector was absolutely new to me. And it didn't sit well for me so that I would need to ask for donations. So it was really something absolutely new for me. So I was working with different advisors. And one of the ideas that I got was a social enterprise as a revenue stream. So a social enterprise, that means that you actually manufacture or sell a product or a service and you request a price for it. So this is how can actually how it can generate revenue. Almost at the same time, one of our friends, who is a veteran, but he studied environmental sciences, he told me about one project that he already started in his hometown in Colorado, and that was vermicomposting. When he was telling it to me, I thought, are you kidding me? So this is what he was telling me. You need food waste, actually trash. And you feed it to worms, but you need a lot of worms. They eat it through, they break it down, so it goes through their specialized digestive system. And the end product is a natural soil amendment. And many people call it as a black gold or a king of fertilizers. So the product is vermicompost or worm castings or worm poop or vermicast. So it has actually several words for it. When I started doing research, I could see that was everything legitimate. I was just overwhelmed by the benefits. Almost at the same time, this is when it happened in Douglas County that almost all recycling has been suspended. And that was heartbreaking for me. It is still heartbreaking because I come from Germany where separating waste is just your normal daily routine. So you separate in like, I think, six different containers or bins, but that the recycling has been completely suspended. It was really heartbreaking. So that's why how all these pieces came together. So that's why this is how I saw that this whole social enterprise offers benefits on many levels, and I love every part of it. Not only recycling or the soil amendment, but also employing veterans. And it's also a land stewardship. So this is how we started working on this social enterprise. But we, of course, have continued and we are still doing our activities for veterans, outdoor activities and land stewardship projects in the Umpqua National Forest as well. So we collaborate with Forest Service about trail clearance or renovating info kiosks. So this is actually like a, just a short history of our beginning.
Thank you so much for that. Yeah, it sounds like an amazing organization. And I can imagine that the veterans and their families are really appreciative. Like what types of, well, I guess two parts of this, like how many veterans are involved or veterans and their families, and what has the feedback been?
So before COVID, we were also doing fly tying classes at the VA, and there were many veterans who were involved. So these classes were taking place at the VA, and there would be always a group with between maybe 3, 4, 5, and 10 or 12 veterans. And that was definitely like a highlight for them. So to come out once a week and to be in an like a little bit informal atmosphere with other veterans, but doing something meditative, tying flies. We also had retreats for veterans and their families, and that was really just amazing. There was also, of course, an impact on the lives of veterans concerning land stewardship, because it is so mission-driven. So you're on public lands, and it is also about taking ownership of these lands and making improvements there. But this year, so we have actually expanded our programs. So due to a grant from the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and that's why we do regular activities, including fly fishing, hiking, and also equine assisted practices or horse encounter sessions. And it was really great for me to see family members joining during some activities. So it's a venue for not only for veterans, but also their family members, because there are actually maybe sometimes some activities for veterans, especially like in urban areas, but these activities are mostly only for veterans, and some of them wouldn't be able to go there because they would like to spend some time with their families or children or something like that. So in any case, it was really great for us to be able to accommodate veterans' families as well.
Awesome. Yeah, so I was going to ask what types of activities, but I think you've already mentioned them. But yeah, I'd love to hear more about, like you mentioned the fly fishing. I'd love to also hear more about the vermicomposting and like Heal Terra, is that the name of it? So yeah, can you tell me a little bit more about those and also the equine or like horse encounters? That sounds interesting too.
Yeah, sure. Okay, maybe let's start with... Heal Terra. So Heal Terra is our social enterprise. So I came up with this name because vermicompost is about healing earth or healing soil. So that's why Heal Terra. And this is just so important for us to be aware of the damage, actually, what we have been doing. And this is because of synthetic fertilizers, pesticides, and insecticides. So, and that's why how many people actually say that we need to heal soil and we have to feed soil. So that's why this product, vermicompost, is about introducing like billions of microorganisms. So that means life into soil. And this is when these microorganisms can bring in the nutrients that the plants need. So that's why many say, feed soil, not the plants. And then, of course, the plants will be taken care of. So, in 2018, I started working on grant writing, and I had a really great grant mentor. And so this is how we were able to raise about $100,000 for our startup equipment. So in any case, but first we started just on a very small scale, just in our backyard. So we had one tub with that just a little bit of worms, and we started actually with our food waste. First, we were just dumping food waste in the tub, and we could really see something doesn't work. It didn't look so well. So we started seeking also advising, And it was really amazing for us to establish a contact with, his name is Dan Holcomb, and he's been at the forefront of this vermicomposting since like 1988 in the whole country. So he's actually an engineer, and he has developed a design of big, large-scale digesters or bins. And so we started actually working with him. He is retired, so he has already volunteered many hours for us just through advising. And this is when he told us, so if you want to be successful in it, you need to blend your food waste. You need to break it down so that it looks like a cow patty. When it has this consistency, this is when you feed worms. And that makes sense because worms are small. And when you break it down, make it like smoothies, it will be much easier for them to process it. So when we started these improvements, we could see improvements in the tub, in the material itself. So we started with one tub, as I said, and then last year we had already five tubs because worms are multiplying really fast. And we actually were also donating sometimes worms. But as I also mentioned, so I started working on different grants. And we started also working on how to build up this infrastructure for food waste on the level of the county. So because with tubs, we can do a food waste only maybe just from a few households. And this is not something what we were thinking about. We were thinking about going large scale so that the whole county can benefit from it. So we received funding for a greenhouse, a really big greenhouse, like 100 feet. We received funding for a digester, which is about 56 feet long, and it is with electric winch. So it's also based on a continuous flow through system. This is a very efficient way to do vermicomposting on a large scale. We have already installed this everything. We were very lucky to collaborate with Douglas County, with our local government. So, we are leasing some property from them. It is really great for us to work with many organizations, including local government. So, as I said, we have this greenhouse, we have this digester. So we actually started this already on a large scale. But as for now, we are using only compost to feed worms because we are still working on finalizing the last pieces of equipment so that we are able to collect food waste in Douglas County.
In our next segment, you'll hear Heal Terra's plan for getting established at a larger scale. Do you have a photograph which captures the natural beauty of the Umpqua watershed? Umpqua Watersheds is compiling photos which highlight the splendor of this region. We're collecting images of native flora and fauna, as well as landscape scenes, to feature on our website and use in a calendar that we're putting together for 2022. If you'd like to contribute a photograph, please email Ryan at umpquawatersheds.org. Again, that's R-Y-A-N at umpquawatersheds.org, with scenes of the Umpqua in the subject line. Thank you in advance. Welcome back. We're interviewing Elena from Source One Serenity.
So in any case, this is our plan at the beginning. So we want to collect only commercial food waste at the beginning. And there are several reasons. So we will need food scraps and only vegetative food scraps, but also we're including coffee grounds and the eggshells, for example, but we cannot use meat or fish or dairy products at the moment. So that's why we need to work with certain restaurants or kitchens so that we have a very transparent and good communication with them so that we are on the same page so that what they're separating is exactly what we need. because it will be a new process for these kitchens as well. So there are several organizations here who have already committed in doing that, and they are also already excited to do that. So that's why it's like urgent for us to finalize this final pieces of equipment to be able to get started as soon as possible. I really want to say that, for example, Loggers Tap House has already committed to doing it. So that's why we are just really look forward to start collecting food waste. So in any case, this is how it is at the beginning. Yeah, but we, of course, are already looking on the longer term. So because we want to explore opportunities of composting everything. So and if we compost everything, so it can be a feedstock for our worms on the longer term. So yeah, we can use also yard debris. So anything what is organic. And by the way, so I also wanted to mention that many people are not aware of that we are actually so we're sending so much food waste just to the landfill. And this is not good for our environment. So for example, many people even don't know that 1/3 of methane emissions come from landfill and exactly from organic matter. So that's why this is our mission and our goal is to divert food waste from the landfill and actually so to use it for our benefit. So and benefit, I mean, so manufacturing the soil amendment. And I also want to mention here so that actually our social enterprise is based on a circular economy principle. So we are using waste or trash. We are converting it into a different material. And what is interesting from this material, I mean, worm castings, there is no trash. So we close this circle.
Yeah, no, it's great to have that closed loop system. I used to be a teacher before I did AmeriCorps, and I had a vermiculture system, very like low, like small scale. but we had double lined bin system. And it was great to involve the youths in that project too, and to see what breaks down and what doesn't. And we got a sense of, yeah, we did kind of like a layering system. The worms would break things down, and especially, like you said, smaller pieces. And we would have, you know, something we could add to the garden. We helped at a local garden, and we would put the worm castings in the soil and mix it in. And the person we volunteered with was very appreciative to have it. So what kind of worms do you use?
So we use red worms or compost worms. So this is what they are called. So they have actually different names. So these worms are native worms. So that's why it doesn't matter to them. So if it is winter, so of course, yeah, they are more active when it is warmer, of course.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Can you tell a little bit about the like horse encounters also? So what types of activities do people just like meet the horses or ride them or
yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, so we started that actually this year, and of course we work with her name is Irene Abel, and she has a ranch in Melrose with horses. So she's certified in equine assisted practices, so she is facilitating this. And she's doing this really great. I was observing it once. And so this session is about, horse encounter. But so this session, for example, would start with a small introduction. So informing veterans about horses, and also we're getting some information because some people are, for example, are very afraid of horses. And that's why it is really important to know the experience with horses before. And so this session also continued with a meditation in a circle, and the horses were still a little bit aside. So it started first with a meditation and setting an intention for the session. And a little bit later, so with the facilitator, Irene, she led horses to walk closer. And it was an interaction, and it was also a nonverbal communication. It is about feeling horses. And this is one you don't need to speak, but it is about also being aware of your own feelings and understanding so that horses actually feel it. So this is actually my interpretation or my observation from a side, but we had so interesting feedbacks from veterans, and I really want to mention one. So at the end of this encounter session, of course, everybody was sharing how they felt, how it was for them. One veteran said that he would like to quit smoking. It was a little bit surprising for me to hear. I mean, so you come to a horse encounter session and you get a little bit different a message. But this is what he has told, that he actually, because he's smoking and he had to step outside during the session. So he had to step outside for to smoke. And when he came back, he really said that the horse didn't like that smell. And that was a message for him to quit smoking. It's really amazing, which you can expect.
That's incredible. Yeah, I've only taken a few horseback riding lessons, but I appreciated them a lot. And one message that I learned from the person who was like leading the lessons was that, you don't necessarily need to give verbal commands or cues. Like you can just do a slight little nudge in a certain direction. And I don't know, I just like the idea of incremental prompts to the horse, sort of. So like if a slight tap on the side gets them to turn the direction you want, you don't need to do anything more. Like you don't need to kick them. You don't need to, you know, do anything really harsh to them, like, cause they'll respond. And yeah, animals can, you know, like even like if I've just eaten an orange and I'll like go to pet the cat or something and she's like, "Ooh, I don't want that." You know? So like they will react. And if we are mindful of their reaction, then that can give us a message. But that, yeah, that's incredible that he realized like, okay, like this animal is reacting to the smoke on me and doesn't like it. So maybe that means something that I should change or consider thinking about. What has the role of nature been in helping veterans to heal?
This is a really good question. And it is really true that nature heals. And there has been so many different studies done so that just being in green spaces, it heals holistically on different levels. It comes us down, reduces stress and anxiety. And also because we are in this green space surrounded by trees, there is also an immune boost from just being in the nature and being around the trees. And for example, I am not fly fishing, but I would also watch, of course, others who fly fish. And I really see that people become very mindful without any text. So, I mean, you don't need to talk about mindfulness if you're in the forest and if you're, for example, fly fishing, if you're in the river and you're casting. You have to be aware of everything around you. So the river, the flow, the trees, the bushes, where you throw. And this is exactly at this moment, there is no past. This is when you are in this present moment. This is it. What is also interesting, there is a beautiful article in National Geographic, and it's exactly about, especially after being in nature, after 3 days. So there has been several studies done, and it's been just proven that we improve our problem-solving skills as well. We are becoming more creative. Yeah, it's just amazing. So, and that's why I really like about nature. So to look at everything holistically, and that's why I like every part in our organization. So including our social enterprise, it is about the holistic approach in everything.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. I've interviewed other people about forest bathing. I don't know if you've heard of forest bathing.
Yes, yes. Book.
Awesome. So that just that idea of like kind of that like mindful, intentional time in nature that really calls your attention to the present moment and using your senses and that awareness or like noticing or observing what's going on around you. So that just really resonated with me and reminded me of those interviews.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is really true. So that, for example, yes, I also have this book on forest bathing. And so there are more and more doctors who are prescribing nature. And that makes sense.
So thinking about other veterans in the community who might be listening to this show, how could people who have served get involved with your organization if they're not already?
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. So first thing is just to go to our website, sourceoneserenity.org. And when you open the website, so there is actually a button with a calendar. So when you push on this button, then you will see our monthly activities. So we usually do a calendar on a monthly basis. So just to be aware of what is happening, I mean, concerning weather conditions and so on. So this is one way to be involved. I mean, so just to sign up for the activities they're interested in. Another venue is volunteering concerning trail work in the Umpqua National Forest. We have just applied for a grant with the National Wilderness Alliance, and we are working together with the National Forest Foundation and the Forest Service concerning trail maintenance and trail work. It's actually about reopening a trail in the Boulder Creek Wilderness. So many people, of course, know the North Umpqua Trail in our area, which is 79 miles long. But many people maybe don't know that 43% of this trail has burned. And that's why, of course, it is not accessible. So that's why it is so important right now to reopen or to maintain those trails that exist and that were not touched by wildfires. And Boulder Creek Wilderness is an amazing idea because it can also connect potentially to the North Umpqua Trail. There is a trail there, but it hasn't been maintained. And that's why there is a lot of work to be done there, including signs. That's why we are so excited to work on this project. So they can just check our website. And if they're interested in volunteering concerning trail work, they can just send an email or contact me per phone.
Great. And how about other people, maybe who haven't served, but like how might they volunteer to assist with the organization or support you in some other way?
Yeah. So concerning this project in the Boulder Creek Wilderness, we will be working not only with veterans because we really could see a strong interest from community members who are not veterans, but they were interested in doing this trail work. And that's why, so we want to actually connect veterans with the community. So that's why it makes sense for us to work just with the community, of course, including veterans, and doing this meaningful work in the Umpqua National Forest. So yes, people, of course, can, if they really are interested in supporting in any other way, they can just always call us or send a message. For example, yesterday I got a phone call from one, he's a veteran, but he wants to donate his fly tying materials and we can always need it. So there can be any other ideas. So we are very open to talk to people.
Excellent. Is there anything else you'd like to share before we wrap up the interview?
The other thing what I also wanted to mention that we actually have adopted a butterfly garden at Stewart Park. And we have adopted it because we also want to introduce worm castings in this. But it is also about awareness. We already had a great event last Saturday. And there is a beautiful article in the news review about it. So it was really great to work with the students and also a Blue Zones project and UC Veg. So it was really great. So if you are just in Stewart Park, please walk by and enjoy that butterfly garden.
Yeah, I've seen it. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Yeah, thank you so much for inviting me. Thank you.
You're listening to an episode of Living Downstream on KQUA, brought to you by Umpqua Watersheds. Before we go to our final interview for today's episode, I'd like to share the song Rise by Eddie Vedder. This song makes me think about finding our way in nature, as both of our speakers are talking about today.
Such is the way of the world, we can never know just where to put all your faith and how will it grow. Gonna rise up, bring back holes and dark memories. Gonna rise up, turn mistakes into
Watersheds is now offering opportunities for youths to have their voices heard on our radio program. Kids ages 8 to 18 are invited to submit a 1 to 3 minute audio recording describing a positive change they'd make in their community if given the power to do so. Entries could be in the form of essays, stories, raps, songs, you name it. Please send submissions to our AmeriCorps member at ryan@umpquawatersheds.org with youth entry, making positive change, in the subject line. Teachers and parents, reach out if you'd like to learn more. Are you interested in volunteering with Umpqua Watersheds? On Saturday, June 5th, we'll be having a training for various volunteer positions within our organization. If you'd like to learn more, email our AmeriCorps member at ryan@umpquawatersheds.org. Mark your calendars for our volunteer training on June 5th. And now back to Living Downstream.
Next, we have Casey Hovick, Executive Director of Umpqua Watersheds, who will share about upcoming programs and the power of diversity and biodiversity in increasing organizational and ecological resilience. First of all, how has your organization been handling the pandemic?
Well, it was a big challenge for us at first when, you know, we rely on community events and going out in the field and doing various things, but we quickly adapted. I couldn't be prouder of our board of directors, our volunteers, and our staff, how they totally embraced going on Zoom and collaborating remotely. Our office manager, Melanie McKinnon, has been working from home from the beginning, going to the office once in a while. Our AmeriCorps, Ryan Kincaid, has been remote the whole time. We'll go into the office once in a while. But everyone has been so great to work with, and knowing that we need to stay focused and doing what we can to plan for the future and come out of this stronger than we went into it. And I really believe we are. We've spent so much time in committee work and writing grants and collaborating and planning our virtual events, like our banquet coming up, and just, you know, connecting with each other in the process. It really has helped with the isolation and feeling that we're making a difference.
What are some of the upcoming activities? You mentioned the banquet, but what are some of the other upcoming activities that Umpqua Watersheds has planned? I know there's been a lot that's been virtual. Are there any in-person events on the horizon?
Absolutely. We're really excited about being able to start to return to a sense of normalcy. I think all of us going forward for the rest of the year will always be very wary and making sure that we are COVID safe. And encouraging people to get their vaccines and trying to have events with people who have had their vaccines. But in addition to the banquet we're having, we have a volunteer training coming up on June 5th that I'm very proud of the work that's being done on it. We've created job descriptions for several of our volunteer positions, and we'll give people a chance to know each committee and what volunteer opportunities they have and just connect with people that way. Then we have coming up in July is going to be a very busy month for us. We've got the Camp AmeriCorps on the third weekend of July. And then we also have River Appreciation Day on Saturday, that third weekend of July. We're going to have it at Steamboat Ball Field. We, as I mentioned before, we're going to be COVID safe. We'll be able to have a lot of people camping and spread out, and we'll have music and events. And what we really want to do, because of the Archie Creek fire, is to bring in people and talk about what is being done and what can be done to restore and rehabilitate the Archie Creek area. So we've been working closely with several groups to monitor what's being done. We've got grants and are writing grants to get people in the field to help do with some restoration work and to tell the story of how this catastrophic fire has impacted our community and then how our community is coming together to, again, move forward in a positive way. That area will never be the same in our lifetimes, but it's really, really important that we all are doing something to make sure that future generations can enjoy that beautiful area along the river on our way up to Crater Lake that all of us have enjoyed all of our lives or most of our lives. We want to give future generations that opportunity as well.
Speaking of the banquet, if people aren't available at the time, which is Saturday, May 15th at 7 p.m. So if people can't tune in then, will those like presentations be available after the fact, and where can people find them?
Yes, they'll be on our website, Umpqua Watersheds. The whole presentation will be available. So if you can't tune in on Saturday, May 15th at 7 p.m., just go to our website and you can see the whole thing. We'll also have each of the presentations segmented by committee area, and people can watch that, as well as our keynote speaker, BLM's Jeff McEnroe, is going to be talking about the Archie Creek fire and what the rehabilitation work that he's doing in the Rock Creek area.
How can nature help people heal in difficult and stressful times?
Well, nature is resilient. That's the something that we can learn, and it's resilient because of the biodiversity. If having one single organism, and that's all there is, that would be what dominates that ecosystem. What we see is that you have multiple species working together from different perspectives, adding to that whole ecosystem. So the trees communicate with other trees, and it all works together to build that ecosystem. And diversity is a strength of that. So when there is a catastrophic fire or something has impacted that, that ecosystem comes back primarily because of the diversity within that ecosystem.
Yeah, I'm thinking of like the emerald ash borer is a really big problem back east, as well as there's like, was it hemlock woolly adelgid or something? There's different invasive species. And so if your forest is all ash and the emerald ash borer comes through, then where's your forest, right? But if you have the biodiversity, then okay, well, maybe some of the ash trees get taken down. But if there's a plethora of other types of maples and oaks and different things, then you won't lose the whole forest. So yeah, kind of in these areas when we're thinking about, you know, reforestation, rehabilitation, and restoration, a lot of R words there. we need to make sure we're accounting for that biodiversity so that the system can thrive.
Exactly. That's extremely important, even from in terms of fire. If you have a monoculture plantation, you know, built closely together, and the fire will go through that like matchsticks. But if you have diversity and spacing and different ages of trees, the fire tends to resist it more, at least won't go through it as fast.
Yeah, I recently traveled down to Northern California among the redwoods and saw that, you know, play out in the Jedediah State Park, I think it was called. But yeah, you could see the fire scars on some of the huge trees. Just, I mean, like amazingly huge trees. If people haven't gone to see redwoods, they definitely should. But you could see where, you know, presumably years ago, a big fire had gone through, and the bigger, older trees can heal, right? They'll kind of rebound and they'll start to form that bark around that fire scar. But then, yeah, if they're all younger trees, the same age trees, then the fire goes through and you don't have those older trees, which the older trees are helpful in so many ways. one of which, not only that they can heal, but one of which being that then if they're left in the forest, then they offer, they're kind of like, was it mother trees or nursery trees? They offer so many nutrients for those seedlings that are coming in and trying to grow after the fire. And that's what I saw too, was that, you know, a lot of the down trees that were older had been left and there were other younger trees growing over the top of them, using them for nutrients and such, which was really inspiring. Following up on our discussion of biodiversity and helping with resilience, how can human diversity, whether it be in terms of, you know, people of different races, genders, ages, socioeconomic statuses, sexual orientations, ability levels, or just interests and perspectives, how can all of that type of diversity help an organization to thrive and be resilient during tumultuous times?
No, I think it is. It's so important. Diversity is what builds resilience. And just like we were talking about biodiversity, is having different people in an organization bringing in different ideas and different perspectives and different life experiences allows people to get out from their single point of view. You've lived your life as this type of person and you have a certain mindset because of your life experiences. By bringing in people with different perspectives, it allows you to see, wait a second, that's not what I thought it was. I'm looking at this problem or this situation or this organizational opportunity from a different perspective because of that other person's life experience. And that allows you to come up with better answers. It allows you to connect the dots. If you just have one perspective, you don't have that. And so you're limited on what your ideas are. Umpqua Watersheds really wants to be much more inclusive, an organization, so that we can grow. We can build capacity, not only for ourselves and our organizations, but other organizations that we work with. So bringing those folks in from diverse representation will allow us to grow, will allow our community to grow, and give us all hope that we don't have to be a divided nation. We don't have to be a divided community. Together, we're looking at things and honoring and respecting each other because of our different perspectives will make us strong and will make our community strong.
Yeah, the nation has definitely had a like recent uptick in attention and time given to diversity, equity, inclusion. How is Umpqua Watersheds working toward inclusion and access for marginalized groups within the organization?
Well, the first step is realizing you need to become more diverse. You know, our challenge isn't that we don't want to be, to have more diversity in an organization. We live in a small community and we are pretty much an all volunteer organization, busy doing what we're doing. But the way you do it is to start connecting with other organizations and bringing them in and participating activities from people and organizations different from yourself. And then trying to work on projects and how can we help them? How can they help us? So one of our major projects that we're working on over the next year is taking some space in our building that we own, at least for several years, that recently came up. We lost our tenant. And rather than lease that out as we have in the past, we're going to turn that into a multimedia technology room. We're going to build a radio studio for our radio station, KQUA 99.7, and then improve our radio room. And then bring people from different organizations, different nonprofits and community groups in there to give them space. Because a lot of the problems with smaller groups is they don't have access to technology. They don't have access to free or low-cost meeting space. And then help them that way. And then to work with them, these organizations, we are already doing a lot with many organizations. What can we collaborate on? And by bringing them in, getting their perspective on things, building their capacity, building our capacity, all of a sudden you're starting to become a more diverse organization. But the first thing is to start saying, this is what we want to do. We want to be more diverse. We need, in order to survive and be the best we can as an organization, we need multiple viewpoints coming into it. We're very fortunate to have a long history of people from the LGBTQ community involved as volunteers, involved in our board and staff. We want to continue to do that and build that and bring in people of color, people with disabilities. We want them as part of what we're trying to do. One other thing I'd like to mention is that over the next few months, we're going to be having diversity training for our board of directors. We've had some exposure to that in the past. We want to go back and find a way to train our board and how we can be more inclusive, how we can be a better organization to invite diversity into our organization. So we'll be doing that. I think that's an important opportunity, both for our board of directors and our staff and volunteers. Another thing that we're doing would be to have events that are specifically designed to get, at least to encourage people to come and participate in those events.
Yeah, it sounds like the multimedia room would be a win-win for everyone, right? So it's going to obviously benefit Umpqua Watersheds, but then, yeah, having that space available for local nonprofits or other small groups that might not have access to that type of thing otherwise would be really helpful for them. I think that, you know, partnering with different organizations, helping them helping us, kind of that reciprocal collaboration is just a really good way to go. And I was just thinking too about like types of diversity, because there are so many different types of diversity, right? And I know that Umpqua Watersheds does a lot with youth. And so it's really great that you bring in so many youth perspectives, especially with like the recent Eco Innovations Challenge. We heard from two young kids, you know, 9 and 11 years old, which was so inspiring. And so hopefully we'll be able to do that kind of event again in the future.
Yes. Thanks for pointing that out. Youth are vital to our organization, as is education. We're real proud that we were involved with the League of Umpqua Climate Youth. And two of the people that were involved with that group went on to be litigants in the climate lawsuit. So bringing those people in when they were in high school, having them involved. We've had young people on our board. We want to do more of that to give them an opportunity to get experience in working with a nonprofit, to give us the opportunity of learning from them and moving forward in a way that we can all feel proud about. One of our major events that we do the last weekend in July is our Twin Lakes Youth Wilderness Campout, where we bring in, this year, we're only going to bring in 10 kids and take them up to Twin Lakes. And we bring in all kinds of professionals, biologists, botanists, geologists. I do a thing on astronomy. And it's to teach them about Twin Lakes and what this environment, what is, what all the miracles that you find in a process of having a 3-day camp out up at Twin Lakes. And my message to them is always, there is no planet B. You won't find any of these miracles anywhere in the solar system, anywhere that humanity will probably ever reach. So we need to take care of this planet. And what we get back from them is a lot of these people have never been on a camp out. We used to work with the shelter in Roseburg, and unfortunately that's closed now, but you get people in there that have never been camping, have never exposed to doing anything outside like that. And the sense of wonderment and the great questions they ask. So that brings in a whole different perspective that re-energizes us, that gives us hope for moving forward, and hopefully inspires the next generation of environmentalists, the next generation of scientists. It starts early, and that's really important.
Well, it sounds like there are a lot of great opportunities coming up for people to get involved, not least of which is that upcoming volunteer training on June 5th. So if anyone listening is interested in, learning more about a committee or might want to join a committee or wants to hear about those other roles and positions that we'll have available, definitely reach out to our environmental education and outreach leader, Ryan@umpquawatersheds.org, and we'll be happy to send you more info. Did you want to give any concluding thoughts?
Yeah. So at the heart of diversity and inclusion, at the heart of bringing in volunteers to your organization, it's all about community. And to have a successful, thriving organization, you need to be a good member of the community. Umpqua Watersheds is a proud environmental conservation organization. Sometimes we're at odds with the industry in this county, and people see us as naysayers and just want to hold up progress. But that couldn't be further from the truth. What we want to do is protect our environment, protect our community, and to engage people in a way so that we bring in science when decisions are made. They're sound decisions based on science, and that we're continually educating ourselves, our organization, and our community. So again, bringing in people with diverse points of view is going to improve our ability to do that.
Thank you so much for sharing all this great information on the show today.
Thanks for having me, Ryan. I really appreciate your show. We look forward to listening to Living Downstream every week.
Umpqua Watersheds is now offering opportunities for youths to have their voices heard, literally, on our radio program, Living Downstream. Kids ages 8 to 18 are invited to submit a 1 to 3 minute audio recording describing what they love about the place in which they live. These could be poems, essays, stories, or songs. We welcome their creativity. Submissions should be sent to our environmental education and outreach leader at ryan@umpquawatersheds.org with youth entry, sense of place, in the subject line. This is a great opportunity for families and classes alike.